Welcome to The Podyssey, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the greatest little independent cinema on the planet, The Odyssey in St. Albans. This podcast is a partnership between The Odyssey Cinema and Mix 92.6 FM, Hertfordshire's local radio station. Thanks for joining us. Hello, you are listening to The Podyssey. Of course you are. Brought to you by Mix 92.6, as you know, you regular listeners. I'm here with Nick and Roberto. Hello, boys.
Hello.
Hello.
No Sam today. He's dossing around somewhere.
He's gallivanting again. And it's always films he wants to talk about.
Yeah, he made us, we'll get to this, but he made us watch a film for a watch-along. We're talking about Black Narcissus later as our watch-along. He made us watch it, and then he wasn't even here to talk about it. So Sam must do better. But have a nice time wherever you are. Right, chaps, what have you been up to over the past month? I guess we have to talk about the anniversary screening slash event. I was there. Lovely do. Nice to see everybody.
Yeah, it was great. Great as always, I think. We always get to the anniversary night and there's always pressure like, oh, we need to get everything right, everything's got to be great. And then we get there and then we're like halfway through and we're like, oh, it's actually pretty good. We're like on the bar just having conversations with people and everyone seems jovial.
Yeah, it's fun. It's nice to see like local people show up, people who have been with us for the whole 11 years. I spoke to a couple, Heather and David, and they have been an ABL member since the start and they know they're wonderful people. They really support us by coming and caring about all of us, and I think that the same for most people who showed up. We even were went viral for a minute as well.
Yeah, I was gonna say this
because we had a St. Albans comedian who took a reel and unpaid made it about you know, possibly the Odyssey being one of the greatest cinemas in the world.
Correct.
And yeah, no, we were really happy to sort of receive that attention from people and just to see what we worked really hard to support local cinema for people, and I think that's reflected
nicely. It was a great deal, and it was busy, right? It was busy, it was jammed in there. And the Odyssey is a local landmark. I'll tell you for why. So afterwards, Jem and I came along to it, thoroughly enjoyed it, had a drink after. Then we got an Uber home. I won't send any of the names involved in this. Our Uber driver had a lovely, slightly tragic story about how his first date with a girl was at the Odyssey in its previous guise. And long story short, he is still very much in love with her 40 years later. They're not together, but he thinks about her a lot whenever he passes the Odyssey. And it was a kind of bittersweet, lovely story. But there, the Odyssey is just at the centre of a lot of people's lives.
Yeah. It is. It's very true. Like, you know, I know for a fact even there's a story where, I mean, I wasn't born at the time, but in July, so 2 months before I was born, July 1993, my parents went to see Jurassic Park at that cinema and I was in the womb. So, you know, I've definitely got an affinity
You've been
for
hanging
film
around
since
in
birth,
there.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, lovely dude. Really enjoyed it. Delighted to be invited, as always. And the film has mixed reviews in this studio, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So the film is Blue Moon, the Ethan Hawke film, directed by Richard Linklater.
Yeah, which is still not out, which is nice. You get a very much advanced preview of that.
Yeah, advanced screen, surprise screening for everybody there. Roberto, let's start with you, because I'm worried about starting with Nick. Let's start with you.
Well, I didn't actually watch it on the night, because I was behind the scenes running around. But I was very surprised by the pick, actually, because Richard Linklater is quite a big deal, actually, I would say. I just didn't expect it to be that. I thought it was going to be, you know, I thought it was the Running
the
Man
coral.
For a good while.
I thought you were going to say the Coral.
I thought it could be the Coral, but then the Running Man would be a really good swerve. And then it was like extra swerve because it was Blue Moon. But I had eyed the film because I'd been looking on Letterboxd and it was popping up every now and then from the BFI Film Festival, I think. Mm-hmm. But you could have, it'd be funny because you could have actually, did you see it at the BFI or?
No, but I did say to you like the day before when we were at the leaving drinks, it's like, it's been at the festival, so it definitely has obviously acclaim around it already.
And it was well done, wasn't it? It's a good, solid piece of work.
Yes. Like, yeah, no, I do agree. So competently shot.
Well directed. Ethan Hawke, really good acting in it. I mean, as we were saying earlier off air, sort of secretly think he's tried a bit too hard to win an Oscar with it, but yeah, decent, worth a look, I think, for people.
But it's like, it was a great performance, and I really enjoyed also the side characters in whenever they pop up, especially the barman.
Oh yeah, what's his
Bobby
name?
Bobby Cannavale.
Bobby Cannavale, he's good.
Just like a really, like, I've actually really recently seen him in Only Murders in the Building, which is a TV show, and he's just always pops up as that sort of quintessential Italian gangster sort of person.
Italian American guy.
But he does it so well.
He's a great guy.
Charming.
I really like him. Yeah, I thought he was good in it. It was a bit like a play, I thought, because it's all kind of set in the one bar, wasn't it? Also, fair play to Andrew Scott.
I was going to say, I didn't realise he was in this. I saw him.
When he appeared, I did get a bit of a like, oh, okay, this is going to be good. So then then something clicked in my head that I was like, oh, all right, I now associate Andrew Scott with only good stuff. So that's quite nice for him. Do you know what I mean? When he appeared, I was like, oh, okay, Andrew Scott's appeared. This is going to be good.
Yeah, he's in the new Knives Out as well, isn't he?
Is he?
Yeah. Yeah, glad. He's had like one of those slow rises into Hollywood, it seems, because he's been in big films, obviously, but it kind of feels like he was very much on the, you know, still on the fringes, but now he's really, I think All of Us Strangers probably helps that.
Well, I think his two big catapults into films were, so do you remember Sherlock, the Benedict Cumberbatch singer? He was a unhinged Moriarty and he was amazing, like really calm and then nuts. And that's the first time I think I and most people had seen him. And then he was, of course, the hot priest in Fleabag, which the whole world watched and sort of fancied him in. But he's going great guns, and I was pleased to see him in it. But really lovely dude. We had a bit of screen time. We all appeared on a cinema screen, which is very exciting.
If you've ever wondered what the Podacy looks like behind the scenes, we did a little sketch beforehand of all of us auditioning for said video. So it's quite meta in that way.
It was good, that longer video. I enjoyed it.
I think we got quite a few of our staff members in. Nick was playing Monopoly with our colleagues Michael and Evan on stage, which I think alone was quite funny. And then I pitched Cheese Plate Frisbee, Sam was auditioning us, and then we all convened for this little policy section where, honestly, I'm not even joking, Neil stole the show with his acting.
Somebody mentioned that to me on the night. I mean, we talked about Ethan Hawke's performance. Somebody mentioned on the night there was another great actor in the seats. I couldn't possibly comment.
Honestly, it was like, because we've done more sketches for our social media and stuff, so we've had a bit of acting experience. And I don't know, school plays, I'm sure. Did you ever do the school play?
Well, do you know what's so mad? And this is, I shouldn't really admit this. So my wife Jen was kind enough to say, oh, you were good at it, you're good at it. I was like, that's nice. And then you guys said it, and then somebody else randomly said it to me at the thing. Do you know what? After a few drinks, I did think, maybe something inside that needs to be, the world needs to see.
It was the face drop when you got told by Bethany it was a terrible idea. I felt the room pause. Everyone was like, oh, like it was like a mixture of like, oh, funny gag, but also, oh my god, I feel terrible.
I mean, it's what me and Brad Pitt know. You do less to do more. You see, I'll talk to you guys about it off air. I'll talk you through. But no, really enjoyed it. Lovely event. Really enjoyed being part of the video. Loved seeing us on the big cinema screen. That was exciting. Yeah. And Blue Moon. It's an intelligent, talky film. If you're in the mood for one of those, I would say go and see it. Is it showing still?
I am not sure. Okay. I'm not sure if we haven't got the December program.
Oh, fine. You may be able to catch it. But worth a look. But a good do. Anything else you guys have been excited about since we last spoke?
Well, in terms of films we've got coming up, I finally watched One Battle After Another, which is kind of the, for film of the year for a lot of people. I've heard film of the decade as well. I guess in the last 10 years or the 2020s at least.
Right.
While I wouldn't go that far with it, I did really enjoy it, and it is probably definitely one of the most fluctuating cinema experiences in terms of like settling down for like, okay, this is going to be a really serious film, and then eventually starting to have a lot of fun watching Leonardo DiCaprio like bumble his way through like a thriller film, basically.
What's the synopsis then? Give us a bit of an overview.
So essentially, Leonardo DiCaprio is an ex-revolutionary, although interestingly enough, he's kind of like, he was kind of more in it for this woman he loved who eventually disappeared, but they had a child together. And now he lives with their daughter off the grid, you know, because his actions have drawn the ire of the higher-ups. And Sean Penn plays a character who is essentially after both him and his daughter. And essentially Leo and his daughter are split up, and it kind of is this film to of Leo trying to reunite with her while the past is kind of, you know, all brought into question, and they essentially try and fight off the American military, and it's very scrappy, very kind of sprawling in the way it's shot, especially towards the end when it's in like the rolling hills of the I can't remember where it takes place, but you know, kind of go from like American city life to the American wasteland, and I really enjoyed it.
I've heard it's amazing. Like I've read, like I think I saw a couple of 5-star reviews of it around the place.
It's been getting rave reviews. And I think also, for good reason.
It made me think, like, you don't see DiCaprio in many kind of action-y films.
Yeah,
he's playing against type, which I guess is part of the point, right?
I think so, and I think the film kind of is also quite good in subverting your, because I think one half of the film, especially concerning his daughter, is very much this political thriller and very like, you know, intense and heavy, and you know, there's a lot, especially in terms of like the politics of it. There's a lot going on, and then you cut to like Leonardo DiCaprio running around with a rifle, going like, "Where is everyone? What's going on?" And I think that dynamic really worked, especially, and it adds to his character as well. I thought his character was very well written. I thought Chase Infinity, who plays his daughter, was incredibly well acted, well written. And she has to like go up against Sean Penn in like a couple scenes, like kind of verbally and physically scrap with him. Mm. And I was like, that's crazy for a newcomer to do, because Sean Penn is giving it his all as well, and he plays like a magnificent villain. Probably
he's a good baddie.
One of the most like memorable villains of the year for me.
Have you seen it, Nick?
I have seen it, yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it as much. I don't agree with the sentiment that it's like one of the best films of the decade.
Yeah.
Of the year? Oh, yeah, I would say of the year.
But it's a good film.
It's a good film, yeah. It's great, because it really takes you on a journey.
And it is timely as well. I think that is another
thing. Yeah, I was going to say that as well.
A lot of stuff going on that is reminiscent of American politics. And
yeah,
and
exactly.
The climate right now.
Anything that you might see in America sort of is happening in that film as well. Obviously, revolutionary sort of working their way to defeat the sort of immigration policies and what they stand up for as well. But the performances are excellent. And Chase Infinity is like a newcomer as well. It's her first role.
Wow.
And she plays it excellently. Sean Penn is so unhinged. As, you know, he's sort of that. He is that sort of like guy who's probably worried about the woke agenda or something like that. And there's parts in there as well that you could, his physical performance actually is very telling of just like, you're a creepy dude.
Right.
Like there's a part in it as well where he tries to comb his hair down. He's got like that, you know, helmet hair sort of, and he sticks his comb in his mouth like jingling around in his mouth, and then puts it through his hair, and just like that's just weird.
That is just
really fucking weird.
Oh, I'm definitely going to see this. And can we see it? The Odyssey? I mean, we haven't got the listings. I don't think.
Yes,
we can.
We do.
We do have these.
Okay, we've got it coming up. We've got it the 18th of November and 22nd of November as well. But I'll give you the times later on in the coming up.
Nice. Yeah, I'm definitely going to see that. I really fancy it. Nick, before we move on, anything you've seen that you've enjoyed?
I can't even remember if I mentioned it last month, but me, Sam and Roberto did some trips to the BFI London Film Festival.
Oh, nice.
But that was more like late October, wasn't it?
Yes.
Or early October. Saw a few films there, films that are out now or coming up at the Odyssey, which I'll mention later. But I thoroughly enjoyed spending time there with a lot of film buffs and stuff like that. And I just enjoyed a chance of seeing, because I am a massive film nerd, that I enjoy seeing films a little bit earlier than some. And what I saw was really good, especially something that won't come out for a few months, probably, but easily one of my best films of next year is a film called Hamnet, with Paul Mescal and Jesse Buckley, which is based on a book of the same name, where it sort of like tells you the story of Shakespeare and his wife and their sort of tragedy that strikes them during a period of time and influences Shakespeare to write Hamlet. Mm.
Is Paul Mescal Shakespeare?
Yes, yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Without saying too much, it's definitely like incredible, like film. That, to me, is one of the films of the decade.
Oh, right? Okay, interesting. Like, okay, honestly. Hamnet. You heard it. So Hamnet.
Hamnet.
Hamnet, yeah. Okay. Yeah, Paul Mescal, this won't worry him at all. He's yet to win me over a little bit. Maybe this will do it. But as I say, he won't worry about that at all.
Well, if you've only seen Gladiator 2, then...
I was going to say that. I think like Gladiator 2 wasn't... I think, obviously, you always got to take the swing at the film star role, but I don't think he quite... I think he really works as like a kind of...
A more
kitchen
normal
sink,
person,
gritty, yeah. like grounded social realist actor.
Yeah,
I didn't quite buy him as a gladiator, as it were.
No,
but maybe that, I don't know. Maybe that's because Ridley Scott didn't do enough for him.
But then, you know, we were saying all of our strangers sort of brought Andrew Scott into the wider ring of things, and potentially I think that's what maybe they're trying to do with Paul Mescal.
Yeah.
But there, I feel like maybe he hasn't been in the game as long as Andrew Scott and potentially will just have that rise eventually throughout it.
I think so.
And of course, a lot of film adjacent people in the anniversary screening, so maybe I'll be in Gladiator 3 after somebody witnessed my performance.
Yeah.
We never know.
Exactly.
Never know.
I'll tell you one thing I really liked about last month is that I got to serve Armando Iannucci at work.
Oh, that's cool.
Because he was at the anniversary as well.
Oh, that's great.
With his wife. And that was, Michael turned to me and was like, is Armando Iannucci here? And I was like, yeah, he's over there. And then he came up to the bar and I literally looked at Michael and I was like, it's over here now.
Oh, amazing.
I did. When I realised he was there, I was like, oh, we just put our comedy sketch up in front of Armando Iannucci, who is one of the most critically acclaimed comedy writers in the nation.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. He probably had some notes, hopefully.
So I tell you what, we're going to take a break there and let's talk off air about how we would definitely try and get him on the pod.
Yes.
We've got it in there. Right. So it's all fun and games now, but prepare for a lull because we are about to come back and talk about Black Narcissus, which Sam made us all watch and then sodded off and didn't even come to this bit. Goodness me, I've got some views on it. Right, we'll take a break and we'll see you shortly. Okay, welcome to part two of the Podyssey here in November. Chaps, okay, so we had to do a watch-along. We did Black Narcissus, which is a 1947 film. Roberto, I just want to explain why we did that, because it must seem really random if you're listening to this. So there's a reason we did this film before we get into it.
Yeah, so usually with our watch-alongs, we kind of like to link it to something we're showing at the moment, you know, Superman for Superman and Days of Thunder for F1. And I was taking a look at the programme, and if you didn't know already, we've started something called a film club, which is essentially Saturday matinees later on in the month, we show a classic film, and afterwards, you can stay afterwards, and we can have there's a discussion essentially led by Sam, and I believe our colleague Mikey as well joins in, and essentially, yeah, we're trying to kind of enrich a bit of a film lover community spirit going on at the Odyssey. So essentially after film club screenings, you can come, you get a free coffee, free tea if you want, and you can essentially talk to us and other people about these films that we've screened and what makes them valuable or what makes them stand the test of time, or even just other films if you just want to talk to people about other films. And for this month, we have The Red Shoes on Saturday the 22nd at 1 o'clock, which is a very classic British film directed by Michael Powell and Emmerich Pressburger, who are it's interesting. I don't think the layman would know about them necessarily. I definitely didn't know about
Speaking
them.
Speaking as that layman, I can confirm that's correct.
Yeah. I didn't know about them until I went to university, or even maybe a bit before university, because, as I'll bring up probably later, Martin Scorsese is a massive fan of them.
I read this. It's his favourite film, Black Narcissus.
He's been influenced by them like many times. Mm-hmm. And The Red Shoes. I think The Red Shoes might even be, because I think he loves all of them, but The Red Shoes might be his absolute favourite. And he's talked constantly about shots that he's kind of like ripped from them. And
right.
And yes, Black Narcissus. Black Narcissus was actually the film that came out a year before The Red Shoes by the same directors. And I hadn't watched it, and I've been meaning to watch it for ages. So I thought, you know what, guys, why don't we watch Black Narcissus for the watch along this week, and we can talk about the similarities to the Red Shoes. And then we all proceeded to watch it, and I think we've gone, oh, this is a complex film. And I think
yes,
the Red Shoes is similar in a few ways, but it definitely, not in a bad way, streamlines a lot of what's going on here, and also tells a story much closer to home. Whereas part of what makes Black Narcissus quite a complex film is that it's a film about the end of British colonial rule in India, and it's about these nuns trying to set up a convent there and essentially completely failing. So yeah, there's a lot to talk about.
Is a lot. So yeah, look, I would say let's chuck some caveats in here. First, it was very well made. I couldn't have made it. Had some interesting themes in there. It was felt quite homeworky for me, because obviously you guys love the, you know, the kind of cinematography and the colouring and the way shots mirror. I'm kind of in it for the entertainment.
which there's
I didn't love it from that point of view. So here's some notes I made.
Okay.
We won't spend long on me because I don't have loads to say about this film. Right. 1947, slightly thickly. I was quite surprised it was in colour, but then it turns out colour's been around since the 1900s. Mm. I googled this. It influenced, like you said, Scorsese, but also influenced Frozen. The bloke who directed Frozen.
You stole my trivia.
Oh, no, oh, no, I feel so bad because that was me googling. I didn't. It's not that I worked that out. No, I completely googled
that. I had found it, and I'd actually completely forgot to write it in my notes today, and it just left my mind, and I just remembered that. Yeah.
And you can sort of tell a bit.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Can,
so
I
yeah.
Think.
So the guy who directed Frozen.
You?
Well, just the kind of.
All in the mountains and the
yeah, and oh, the and the kind right. of solitude and the kind of mistrust of the yeah, I kind of got that
culture.
What I would say, Mr. Dean appears. He's a character in this. For any of you who may not end up watching Black Narcissus, you lucky sods. Mr. Dean appears. It's got, bear in mind, he's the kind of charismatic hero/anti-hero of the thing.
Mm.
It's got to be the least cool entrance that has ever made. It's on a tiny horse.
Sorry for all those ponies.
In shorts that are so small, and he just looks absolutely ridiculous when he lands. I've written in here, Mr. Dean, tiny horse, tiny shorts. Interesting that it was set in the Empire and was obviously at the time that was probably quite an interesting take on all of that sort
of
thing.
Well, I didn't know until I looked up yesterday, but this film came out the year British colonial rule ended in India. So there's definitely an element of reckoning with that, and I would say reckoning with the negativities of that.
Yes.
I'll get more into that later. But
so I'll give a quick synopsis and then we'll get on to Nick, who I'm sure has much better points for me to make. So basically, nuns in a convent trying to, depending on which side of the fence you're on, being slightly white savoury to the local community or trying to help the local community. There's kind of a bit of both at play.
Mm.
The outside world kind of comes in the form of Mr. Dean, who's a kind of handyman / don't really know why he's there, but they kind of sort of fancy him / hate him, depending on which man you're talking about.
Yeah.
But he's kind of the outside world coming in. And I guess, God, this is almost hurting my head, but you know, like the kind of colonialism analogy, he's kind of coming in saying, why are you even here? This is mad. Like, this is the whole way you live is crazy. And the nuns are like, you know, how dare you? This is important. Which is, I guess, how some people felt about colonialism and stuff like that. He comes in. The nuns all go a bit giddy because the outside world's kind of in there. Various things happen. One of them has a tragedy within the local community, which kind of puts her off. There's a mad woman caretaker just shucking about the place.
Yeah.
Don't know what she was all about. She was really annoying. And then it's very tragic at the end that it doesn't end well. That would be my take on it, really.
I have to admit, when you sent the message, like, oh, that was depressing, I was like, oh, is this just a film about, like, all of these nuns just taking the axe, just going and just...
Yeah, not tons of
murders
hope
and...
in there. Like, I vaguely hope them not. Yeah, so, Nick, what did you make of it?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I watched it last night and I fell asleep during it.
Quite
not because not because of the film content. I just got really comfortable and started falling asleep. So I did go back after I'd woken up, rewatched all the minutes that I'd missed. I found it a decent watch. Like, I'm in the middle of what you're saying, which is like, yes, I enjoy the cinematography and things like that, and the element, like the style elements, but I'm also in it for the entertainment as well. So I found it entertaining enough to where I was like, I did want to go back and rewatch those things that I'd missed. However, it was just like a little, I don't know how to really explain it. Like, it's one of those things where you want things to happen. There are things happening, but they're very subtle and it's very under sort of explained or anything like that. And I, to a point, agree where I'm like, I'm doing a bit of homework here. I'm having to read between the lines of what's happening with the actions of these nuns. And Mr. Dean, yeah, I had a science teacher called Mr. Dean, and he was not a nice person either. So I'm attributing that to
that.
Did he
wear tiny shorts and ride
no, thank
the world's
God.
Smallest horse?
I mean, he would have broke that horse. But yeah, I just felt sorry for all the ponies and these little the people that, you know, the local people. The one thing I didn't understand about it was why they were getting paid to go to the convent, first off. Himalayan people. I suppose that's just, you know, that's nothing anyway. It's just a bit of the story line.
Yeah.
It was because I suppose that no one was going to show up and they wanted to make it.
I reckon if we knew history, there's probably a reason for that. There's probably there's probably a name for that payment or something.
Well, I think they do mention, because they mention the general is paying the civilians to go to the convent, mm-hmm. and then Mr. Dean kind of very condescendingly says like, oh well, you know, they'll make it a habit. And I think maybe it's,
but the general is the general is the one who's like, you should make this place into a convent, right? A hospital.
I think so. The old general you see like at the start, and he disappears later on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think he was. Sorry, it just brought to mind as well, because he was like, we've bought the things they want to eat in, sausages.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like, is that one of those things? Like, and then I was like, oh, I never saw a sausage throughout the rest of that film. I just, that completely left my mind. Sorry, completely sidetracked.
But no, that's cool. I mean, even most of the things that I make notes on are what people like are saying, or like things that I can see. So yeah, like. Ponies. I don't know why everyone's on a pony, but here we are.
I guess
horses
that's what they did in the Himalayas. Yeah.
Maybe they're
a
bit more likely to sort of climb mountains. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then just like the analysis, or like the difference between sort of then and now, and obviously like societal sort of norms and whatever. Like one of the sisters saying that, you know, all brown people are the same to her, pretty much. That's what she said. To me, that's like, I know it's very much of its time, but then that sort of beside, like, doesn't put me in a mood to be like, oh, well.
Well, it's quite, like, I guess that sort of thing's interesting, I think, because that was shocking to hear.
Yeah, it was.
But also, I'd imagine, you know, because this is, as we were talking about, this film is kind of looking at colonialism, imperialism, but I'd imagine there was a mix of views back then as well, and that was expressing a view that some had then. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so it's, in some ways it's letting us in on what it was like.
I think more than any other film I've watched like recently, which has been like problematic, and that I do really believe in the argument that like there is a value in looking back and going like, okay, this is what used to happen. Because I've watched quite a few old James Bond film recently.
Oh, my goodness.
and
the
I
one
watched,
where he dresses like a Japanese guy.
Yes. Well,
wow.
And well, so okay. So this is 1947, and there are a few actors who are white playing Indian characters, which is not good. It's very unfortunate. But for this film, interesting, there is an actor called Sabu, who was actually, he worked with Powell and Pressburger again on another film. And he is actually an Indian actor, and he is playing the young general, who I found a very interesting character in that he's kind of portrayed as like quite naive and earnest, but then he's also very receptive to like learning about the convent and like other languages and other practices, whereas the nuns are, as far as we can tell, have no desire to learn anything about the culture they are assimilating into, which I thought was very interesting. And I was talking to you about this on the way here, and I think this is also reflective of their work in general, Powell and Pressburger. They definitely push the boundaries of, like, social commentary, I think. Like, Michael Powell on his own, I think possibly because Emmerich Pressburger didn't want the fallout, directed a film called Peeping Tom later on, which is nowadays a very acclaimed thriller about, I believe, a killer who likes to record what he's doing.
Sure.
and when it came out, it was like, people did not like it. people were very offended by it. And I think you can definitely see here, they want to go into some, at the time, probably quite thorny subject matter.
And it's quite admirable, right? Because what I did get from this film, like, joking aside, they're trying to show people as they really are. Do you know what I mean? And I thought that was quite interesting. So something you hear so much about empire and colonialism in the kind of abstract of history. It must have been quite mad for British people who were just part of that system. So the nuns who just, you know, know loads less than we did because it's in the past. And they're just sort of put in Nepal and like, okay, do some good here.
Yeah,
it's a kind of a mad, for the people who have to do it, it's mad as well.
Yeah, and I think that's what really interests, I think the thing that I really like about this film is the way in which the nuns kind of all, essentially the film explores them being very monastic and very abiding by their religion. And then when they come to this place that has differing beliefs, and there is a, one of my favourite things in the film is there's the holy man who sits on the mountain.
Oh yeah,
and they're constantly like, why is he doing that? Like, why does he just sit there? Why doesn't he talk? And there's a really good line I like later on where they're trying to find Sister Ruth, and they're like, oh, can't you ask it? Surely he can just tell us if he's seen her. And then Joseph
Anthony,
legend.
Yeah, great.
I really like that character actually. He was like, oh, that would be a very small thing to him. And I really like that. I really like that kind of subtle display of, well, everyone has different, like, beliefs, and there's kind of, you know, there's either we reconcile that or, as what happens in the film, we fall apart. But, yeah, I really liked how the nuns kind of all come into this place, it all brought out their, at one point, Mr. Deed says humanity.
Almost like their real selves.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like the part where the Sister Philip, I believe her name is, plants like flowers instead of like the vegetables who she was supposed to, because she just got so like into it essentially.
Yeah.
And but then she doesn't like that she's done that. She's like, I want to be sent away. That I'm doing like wrong here, which is a really interesting exploration of like you know, your desires versus being part of a religious. System.
A lot of themes, to be fair to it.
Yeah,
a lot of
themes. I think so.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting about it as well, this is often considered like one of the early examples of an erotic film, because you have the Sister Clodagh on a lesser scale than Sister Ruth being like quite infatuated with Mr. Deed, who isn't a perfect character either. I think that's something I want to bring up about the red shoes that I noticed is like, when I first watched that film, I was quite surprised how not perfect all the characters were. Like, even Moira Shear's character, I believe that's her name. I might have got that name wrong. Mm-hmm. But essentially, the main character of that film is, even though she's been put through some terrible circumstances, there are still flaws to her personality.
That's same interesting, because older films, mental. It's normally made really clear to you who's a goodie, who's a baddie. And, that's
fair. And in this film particularly, it's, like, really hard. Like, Sister Clodagh, like, at times, she seems very, like, sympathetic. And then at other times, I'm like, well, I disagree. I disagree very heavily. I think that is, like you said, very standout for the time this was made.
I will say I do love the cinematography in it. It's amazing.
Yes.
And I think the performances are really well done as well. But there are some moments even where I think they can sort of try to be a little bit funny. But even that comes off as a bit chilling because it's not like, I don't know. Obviously, they're all quite stern characters, being, you know, stiff nuns essentially. And but you're right in saying obviously that they all have their own sort of like prerogatives in sort of not abiding by that system, but also really wanting to sort of, you know, love their gods, so to speak, through doing the actions that they do, even going into, you know, the village and providing school and stuff like that. So I did find that, like, I found those themes really interesting, but I do think that sometimes it was a bit too, like, on the nose, essentially, with that. I know that sounds odd considering what I've just said, but for example, this, like, Sister Ruth then becoming like a psycho, really.
So pretty much Sister Ruth is presented completely differently to all the other characters in that. Yeah. The way I've actually written a note is, like, when she's in the scene, it's almost like the camera might want to, like, pan over to, like, one of the other characters, and then, like, this magnetic force is just, like, straight, like, into, I believe the actor's name is Kathleen Bryan. Her eyes in this film, and obviously Powell and Pressburger are doing stuff to enhance it, and so is Jack Cardiff, who is the cinematographer of this and The Red Shoes.
Yeah.
And Rambo 2... insane.
No way. So, like, this when he's young,
and Rambo 2 when he's older, probably was like, I need the money.
Yeah, you gotta have work sometimes.
I mean, Rambo 2 is a good looking film.
So you're telling me there was nearly a chance we could have watched that instead.
Sorry, guys. But in university, the way I became aware of Powell and Pressburger is we watched it. I guess it's interesting, isn't it? I became aware of the legendary directors by watching a documentary about the cinematographer and how great he was and how much, like, how much he created an identity for these films as well, including The Red Shoes and A Matter of Life and Death, which is another film they did. And, like, in terms of, like, her eyes in the film, I think, like, I do remember in the documentary, like, he would like put, like, kind of like eyeliner and certain makeup around actors' eyes so that it would be enhanced.
That's cool.
And also, question for you guys: when I was watching this, there were just times I completely forgot this was, like, not shot in India, or, like, not shot on a mountain.
Oh yeah, it was shot in Pinewood. I would totally agree with that.
There's, like, parts where they're in, like, a room and, like, their kind of gowns are, like, blowing.
I agree.
And you're just I just go, this isn't on location.
Yeah, that's fair. That is, it feels so, like, realistic in terms of where it's supposed to be set. It's all Pinewood, I think.
It's all like on a soundstage, I think. I could not believe.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's a good point. So look, chaps, we're running out of time a little bit. Any final thoughts on Black Narcissus? And I think we'll probably just pitch a bit about Red Shoes as well before we stop.
Well, I've not seen The Red Shoes, and I do look forward to going to the film club to watch it. Black Narcissus has not stumped me from watching any other Powell and Pressburger movie, and I've heard good things about The Red Shoes, so I may enjoy that a little bit more than Black Narcissus, but this shouldn't deter anyone from trying out new films.
Yeah, and I would say that, just hearing Roberto and you chat about it, a film can be really good without me as one person necessarily enjoying it all the way through. Like, there's obviously a lot of good stuff in this film, but
I think we were talking as well, we all watched this at, like, kind of inopportune times. We only had this particular slot to watch it. I think definitely like, that circumstances change, like, the way you, because sometimes a film can come to you at a certain point and it isn't usually what you watch, but for some reason you just really connect with it at that time. I think I'd also armed myself with a bit of, like, context going in, or, like, a bit of, and, like, you guys went blind, and I was like, oh, maybe I should have, like, prepared.
I mean, it is what it is at the end of the day.
I guess I'll say that I really enjoyed it. I think it is, because I've heard a lot about it over the years, and it, like, lived up to me. Mm. Obviously, definitely certain elements of it that haven't aged well, particularly in some of the depictions of
context,
the Indian characters. But then there's also some quite progressive things about it, I would say. And I would say overall, I felt more this was a condemnation of colonialism than a. I saw someone say it's like a last gasp of it, but I would actually disagree. And then finally, that I think everything this film does, in terms of especially the writing and the cinematography, the Red Shoes upgrades on, and I think you can tell that this was made. The Red Shoes was made after this because you can definitely tell they've upped their game.
I believe it.
That one.
So, Roberto, give us a very quick synopsis of what the Red Shoes is about and the date again, and then we'll go on to part 3.
Yes. So, the Red Shoes is about a dance instructor, I believe, and he meets a woman who is essentially she. At one point in the film, she says, "I have to dance," and he goes, "Oh well, you don't have to dance. You have to breathe." And she's like, "Well, it is like I'm paraphrasing, but that's what it's like to me." And essentially, the film details their relationship and the complexities of that, as well as her obsession with becoming the perfect dancer. Mm. And again, it's brought to life incredibly by Jack Cardiff, and there's some very very iconic pieces of cinematography that really enhance this quite a dramatic story. So I do recommend coming to see The Red Shoes Saturday the 22nd at 1 p.m. and stay afterwards for a chat with us about it. I'm going to definitely try and make it,
'cause
it's been a while since I've seen it, and I'm going to book it after my my prior engagements that day, straight to The Odyssey.
So there you go, The Odyssey Film Club on the 22nd with The Red Shoes. That was Black Narcissus. We watched it, so maybe you don't have to, but maybe you want to, I don't know. And we'll come back and have a quick chat about what's coming up next. And very excitingly, we will talk about our little Christmas plans. We've got something going on.
Yeah.
So we're very excited to tell you about. So yeah, we'll be back for part 3 in a second. Shh. Right, welcome to the final part of the November Podyssey. Chaps, what are we excited about that people can come and see in the next month or so? Nick, what have you got for us?
So I briefly mentioned that I attended the London Film Festival last month, or about, you know, a month and a half ago. There was a really good film there called Bugonia, which is Yorgos Lanthimos' next movie. He made films like Poor Things, and his first film, well, his first like big movie was The Lobster. It's sort of like a conspiracy thriller that Emma Stone plays like a CEO of a big company, and Jesse Plemons and his...
he's in everything.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, most things. Yeah, most things. Him and a cohort kidnap the CEO because he believes that she's an alien. And he wants her to sort of take him to the spaceship and to sort of get in there and solve a lot of other things that he believes that to be true. And of course, you're sort of wondering, well, is she, isn't she, that sort of thing. It's a very good tete-a-tete sort of scenario going on. It's brilliantly performed by all characters, and it's very tense throughout. You really does keep you thinking to the last second, like, what's going on here? So we've got that on a couple of times, and I believe that starts on Friday the 21st of November at 12:30. Then we have an also evening screening on the 27th at 7:30. And then I also want to recommend, mind you, I haven't seen it, but I am looking forward to it. It's a film called After the Hunt. This is directed by Luca Guadagnino, who I enjoy a lot of his movies. But this is starring Julia Roberts, Andrew Garfield, Ayo Adebiri as well. That itself is a thriller. It's, I believe the synopsis of it is sort of that Ayo Adebiri plays a student who attends a class, sort of, what do they call it?
Like an
extended class. Like she meets with a teacher privately.
Yeah, yeah.
And
something
might happen in there.
Right.
She believes that she has been sort of, you know, mistreated.
Oh, so she's got a kind of seminar with a one on one with one of the lecturers or whatever.
Andrew Garfield, I think, plays that lecturer, and but then something a bit twisted happens, and I believe there's a cover-up sort of scheme going on there, but I don't know much more than that, but I am excited to see it. The trailer is so well done. It has this, like, ticking clock sort of thing going
timely
on.
Timely as well, right? It's, you know, because that's one of the big challenges at the moment is, like...
Right,
yeah.
People coming forward with incidents that only two people were there at. You're hearing quite a lot of that at the moment.
That's, and I love to see Julia Roberts in anything, so... Yeah. And she, in fact, she's back into, you know, some good film. I'd love to see that.
Definitely, yeah. I'm quite interested in both of those. Definitely Begonia now more than now that you said it. Mm. Yorgos is weird for me. I'll always be like, oh, another Yorgos film, and then like I have to hear more about the film. And I go, oh, okay, I'll go see that.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah, nice. My recommendations, as I recommended earlier, I do really suggest One Battle After Another, which we are showing Tuesday the 18th of November at 12:30. And Saturday the 22nd of November at 7 p.m. You heard me talking about it earlier, but it is really great. And I do want to shout out, last month, sadly, Robert Redford passed away. Robert Redford is a bit of a blind spot for me in terms of his acting and directing, actually. I've only ever seen him in Captain America the Winter Soldier, I think.
Is he in that?
He is, yeah. He's quite good in that as well. But I haven't seen a lot of like his very classic films, so I'm hoping to come and see the two films we've got coming up, actually. We've got All the President's Men, Sunday the 16th of November at 5:30, which is, of course, Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman investigating the Watergate scandal. Very influential film, influenced a lot of the kind of journalist thrillers that we see a lot of nowadays. And then on Sunday, the 23rd of November, we have Out of Africa at 12 p.m., starring alongside Meryl Streep, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it's a romance film, rarely seen in the cinema. So this is a bit, I think All the President's Men is a bit more available. So if you do want to come and see a bit of a rarer one, come and see that.
I think it's a classic soundtracky one as well, Out of Africa. It's one that... probably Hans Zimmer, maybe you're winning, but probably Hans Zimmer. But it's one of those where like people
sweeping.
Love the soundtrack.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can imagine. But yeah, if you do want to come and see films from this very influential and pretty magnificent actor and director, do come and see those.
He's a great actor, and also, really interestingly, it's mad how him and Brad Pitt. Well, I guess Brad Pitt started to look like him because Robert was older. So they've been in films when Brad Pitt was young, Robert was older. An older Brad Pitt looks so much like Robert Redford when he was Brad Pitt's age. It's crazy.
Right, yeah.
Like they've really started to kind of...
Yeah.
It's nuts. Absolutely nuts.
And they did a film together, didn't they? It's called like Spy Game as
That's
well.
That's right, yeah.
I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, interesting. Yeah, and also another shout out to Robert Redford. He set up Sundance Film Festival, which is a very massive... And I think he's always been quite a proponent of indie cinema. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of... He's responsible for a lot of like really great independent filmmakers getting their voice heard. So, yeah, bit, quite a loss to the film industry, but hopefully come and celebrate his achievements at the Odyssey.
All right, some good stuff coming up. Very exciting. So, look, we'll end with the news that very, very excitingly, we have been selected to be live. Well, we're on Christmas Eve on the radio. Yep. So the Odyssey will be out next month. It'll be a bit different from normal. You can still get it as a podcast, but it will fundamentally be a 2-hour show. It's going out on Christmas Eve.
Christmas special.
Yeah, it's going to be good fun.
Exciting.
Yeah, we're going to be counting down the best Christmas films. Of course we are. We're playing some Christmas music from those films. Of course we will. We'll be hearing from some friends of the Podyssey. So yeah, it should be good fun. And very excitingly, we are going to have some Christmas drinks after we record that, which I'm very excited about. So yeah, loads to look forward to in all areas. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks, Nick. Thanks, Roberto.
Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, everyone.
Sam, get well, not get well soon. He's probably fine. Come back soon.
Yeah.
And don't make us watch Black Narcissus again. Right. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. Thanks for listening. If you want to drop us a line here at the Podyssey, you can email me at neil.rodger@mix926.com with your thoughts on the show, your views on the films we've talked about, and if you're feeling brave, you could do our next intro or set our next final challenge. You can find out all about what's on at the Odyssey or what's going on with Mix 92.6 FM by checking out the websites and searching them on all the socials, where they can both be found.